This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and for nearly a decade, Russian troops have been battling separatists in the predominantly Muslim region of Chechnya. The conflict has claimed tens of thousands of lives. Recently, though, Moscow claims the situation is stabilizing. Last month, a Kremlin-backed candidate won Chechnya's presidential election. Many Chechens, however, claim the election was a farce. Getting a handle on what's really going on in Chechnya is difficult. Reporters in the region must be accompanied by the Russian military. A new book offers a rare inside view of the conflict. Thomas Goltz is the author of Chechnya Diary. It's his story of covering the conflict going back to the mid-1990s. That's when he arrived in the town of Semashki, and he joins us now by phone from Toronto in Canada. Thanks very much for joining us.
A pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about the town of Semashki and why you went there.
It was a coincidental journey, if you will. It was maybe written that I entered Chechnya illegally from Azerbaijan via Dagestan with a Chechen guide and began encountering all sorts of difficulties in doing a television story that I'd set out to do. And he brought me over to his brother's house in this town called Semashki. It was a dumpy little town in the North Chechen Plain, about 10,000 people in the best of times. It had been reduced to about 7,000 due to out-migration because of the Russian army slowly but surely surrounding it. And at first I was furious with having been dumped in this place. And then I took a look around and I said to myself, no, there is no wrong place to be in a conflict like this. And in fact, Semashki is sort of a Grover's Corners of Chechnya, with a reference to the Thornton Wilder play Our Town. It was filled with completely ordinary people, mainly farmers, electricians, blacksmiths. There were nobody appeared to be an Islamic fundamentalist. Nobody appeared to be a raving nationalist. It was just a bunch of very, very ordinary people determined to defend their town from the encroaching Russian army.
Now, one of the people you focus in the Grover's Corners of Chechnya is a man called Hussein, the local resistance leader. Tell us a little bit about him and what we might learn by understanding someone like him.
Hussein came from the Chechen diaspora in Kazakhstan, where all the Chechens had been driven by Stalin in 1944, and came back to Semashki with, if you will, a sort of an attitude. But his basic attitude was to create a potato farm for himself and for his family, and then got caught up in events. And because he was a collective farm captain in Kazakhstan during the Chechen diaspora, he was one of these sort of magnetic characters that people would rally around. In fact, our first encounter was when he arrested me, or rather when his men arrested me after one night being out after curfew and outside of town. Mm-hmm. But something just clicked with us, and I began becoming embedded with a group of Chechen guerrillas, in effect, long before the word embedded was popular. And so we would go out on missions basically to ambush the train repair crews that were attempting to force an armored train through Semashki. I was not a combatant, of course. I was a journalist, but I was there with my camera. And this led to some very, very awkward events in the future, very specifically that when the town was negotiated its neutrality, when the situation was completely hopeless and was demilitarized and Hussein and his men went into the forest, the Russian military came in and whacked it anyway and basically created the first massacre of the Chechen conflict. Semashki then became known as the My Lai of the Chechen conflict. And Hussein was in part blamed for this, for having left the town naked and exposed to the Russian military and this double cross. And part of the evidence that went into the double cross was that he had allowed a certain KGB agent or FSB agent who was posing as a journalist to take photographs and video material from the frontline defensive trenches. That faux journalist, of course, was me.
We had an email during our earlier segment when we were talking about the current political wrangling in Moscow, but one question came in on this subject from Eamon Guerin in Hanover, New Hampshire. Are we relying on Putin and the Kremlin to give us news from that region? He's talking about Chechnya. Or are there any independent journalists operating in Chechnya today?
It's very, very rare. Generally speaking, that we are relying on bus tours of Western journalists and Russian journalists being sent down who are under some sort of control. Usually that control is if you report illegally or go to Chechnya illegally from Moscow, your bureau, be it the New York Times, the Washington Post, Newsweek, Time, or whatever, is under threat of being closed down. So generally speaking, Western correspondents will be very circumspect about breaking the law and entering Chechnya illegally, and that basically means not under the control of the Russian military. There are some extraordinarily brave correspondents who have gone way beyond this. I would prefer not to name them on air right now. They know who they are, who have been violating this and do get out the occasional report from the other side of the lines. But it is hellishly difficult to do right now.
Well, when you did it, what did you learn by being so close to the rebels, being embedded, if you will, on the other side?
Still trying to sort out what the ultimate answer to that question is, aside from that on both sides of the lines you will find humanity. And one of the things that I find lacking in most reporting on Chechnya today, and indeed in many of the great analytical books about the problem there, that if we look at it on a theoretical basis, it's self-determination versus the territorial integrity of the existing state. Mm-hmm. But the humanity and the complexity of life on either side of a line, one is inevitably drawn to American paradigms, both of history as well as today. When I talk about the book to American audiences, specifically students, I try to use, although it's a little bit dangerous, the experience of the Native Americans in the 19th century, and specifically that of the Nez Perce and the hero of the Nez Perce, Chief Joseph, who is today celebrated as being one of the great Indian leaders, mainly because he submitted. What is less known is there was a parallel chief to the Nez Perce at the time, I believe his name was Yellowtail or Yellowknife, who refused to submit and basically became a guerrilla working in the mountains of the Bitterroot Valley of Montana for another 5 to 7 years after Chief Joseph submitted and basically announced himself that he would fight no further. So what is the duty of a guerrilla, if you will, of a freedom fighter? When is it best to submit and collaborate with overwhelming force in order to save the lives of the women, the children, and the elderly? Or when is it compulsory to you to fight on no matter what the odds? I don't have an answer to this, and what I see happening in Chechnya right now certainly is a modern playing out of that dilemma.
Some of the same themes played out in Ireland in 1922, of course, same kind of debates and a difficult outcome.
Well, exactly so, or even in Iraq today.
And however, if the Chief Joseph analogy holds, if it's now time to maybe back away from the battle, can you imagine some of the people you met giving up on their goals? We just have a few seconds left, but I really did want to ask you that.
Quite frankly, Neil, I don't know. Some of them are no doubt collaborating today. Others are determined to fight on no matter what, simply because of belief or else because they're so psychologically scarred at this point.
So it could play out either way.
All wars eventually grind to a halt, but I don't see any end to the Chechen conflict over the next immediate period of time, alas.
Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thomas Goltz is the author of Chechnya Diary, and he joined us by phone from Toronto in Canada.